Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
The president has created the National Energy Dominance Council, which is a cross-agency effort, like a SWAT team, to try to figure out a way to get stuff permitted faster, because we have to get back in the game. We're reshoring manufacturing to our country, even something as simple as warehousing.
Interior Secretary Doug Burgum testifying before a House Natural Resources Committee.
A current warehouse today might use 5 kilowatts, like the kind I worked in growing up as a kid. A modern one today is 25 kilowatts a square foot. When you throw in robotics, it's 40 kilowatts a square foot. We need demand for just simple things like warehousing, but much advanced manufacturing. All this is going to require more power, and we need a whole of government approach. So it's a big issue. Sorry for my long answer, but this is a critical thing that we're facing as a country.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
How many wildland firefighting personnel are currently employed by the Interior Department?
At a House Natural Resources Committee hearing, Colorado Representative Joe Neguse with Interior Secretary Doug Burgum.
Well, between DOI...
I'm talking about the Interior Department. I understand with respect to the Agriculture Department and the Forest Service, I'm asking about the Interior Department specifically.
But you can ask specifically, but Brooke Rollins and I are committed to working together on this to make sure...
Mr. Secretary, here, hold on. Let me... This is not a gotcha question. Hold on. I went online this morning, the Department of Interior's website. It says 5,780 total number of federal wildland fire personnel employed by the Interior Department in 2024, right? Your predecessor published that number online so the American people could understand how many people in your agency. This isn't a gotcha. I'm just trying to figure out how many people are, what is that number for 2025? It's June of 2025.
It's essentially the same as last year, because we're flat across both agencies at about 17,000.
Will you commit to providing the public and us with the number, with updating the website so that we understand how many fire personnel are employed by the Interior Department?
We'll be completely transparent on all that. I'm trying to give you an answer to that question.
I hear you. You're representing that it's close or essential or similar. I guess I'm just trying to get some representations that we have not lost fire personnel since last year, because as you probably know, I'm sure you're aware, the Forest Service has lost many red card holders, so much so that the chief of the Forest Service put out a video earlier this week imploring those whom had been terminated from the agency to come back. Do you know how many red card holders have left the Interior Department in the last 6 months?
I do not.
You don't know how many red card holders have left your agency?
Well, if they would have left, they would have left their early retirement. We've got 13,000 that
we're
hiring.
Wouldn't that be something it's important to know? How many red card holders have left your agency so that we'd be ready for the fire season? I mean, again, I guess that would be another piece of data that I think would be important for this committee to consider. But I'll move on.
And you're aware that we have 13,000 flex?
I hear you. I'm well aware of that. And I'm also concerned that your agency is apparently not keeping track of the red card holders that have been purged from your agency. But in any event, let's talk about the National
Park
Service.
Can I just say there's been no purging?
Sir,
why do people keep saying purging?
Mr. Secretary, law enforcement, I'm going to ask you a question about the National Park Service. Give me an opportunity to ask you a question.
Can I say,
do you believe the National Park Service...
You said something that's not true.
Mr. Chairman,
you said it wasn't a gotcha.
I'm going to ask you to stop the clock so I can ask the Secretary some questions. So let's talk about the National Park Service. How many positions of superintendent are vacant within the National Park Service?
A number of superintendents are vacant because of the...
I'm not asking you why. I'm just asking you how many. These aren't gotcha questions. How many are vacant? Is it one? Is it 10? We've heard that it's 100. Is 100 accurate?
We have a number of superintendents.
You won't say what the number is?
I'll be happy to get you this. We're filling positions.
Honestly, these aren't gotcha questions. If I ask a simple question...
Of course these are gotcha questions.
It's a gotcha question to ask
you. You won't even let me answer the question.
How many superintendent positions are vacant? I'll ask you why, but I first want to know the premise, which is how many are vacant? You and I both know that there are roughly 100 superintendent positions that are vacant across the country. Now, you have said that the $1 billion cut that you've proposed to the National Park Service represents cuts to overhead, right? Redundancies. I've heard you say that publicly previously, right? I'm not mischaracterizing that, I don't think. It's red tape, right? That's the kind of stuff that you're trying to cut from the National Park Service?
We're trying to cut jobs that aren't in parks. And if there's a vacancy at a superintendent, we fill it with the deputy. So it's incorrect for you to say that we have vacancies, because when a superintendent takes early retirement, superintendents are at the end of their career.
When there's not a superintendent at one of our national parks, when the position is vacant, I think most American people would describe that as vacant.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Representative Neal, I have great respect for you. We've had good conversations, but respectfully, if I weigh 1,000 pounds and you weigh 50, and I gain 10 pounds, or I gain 10%, I have gained 100,000.
At a recent House Ways and Means Committee hearing, Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent, answering questions from Massachusetts Representative Richard Neal.
During President Trump's first tax cuts, the share of taxes paid by the high end of taxpayers increased by more than 7%. And I'm sorry, I chuckled when you talked about the IT at the IRS. The program is 35 years behind schedule. 35 years. And is wasting $2 billion a year.
That's why we put the extra money in.
No. The extra money went in for bodies, and whistleblowers acknowledged that standards were being lowered to bring in new agents. The money is not the issue here. It is how the money is spent.
That's exactly right. We agree on that. How the money is spent. And the last point I would make...
It has been spent poorly.
Let me make this last point, Mr. Secretary. Do you agree with the idea that in 2017 that the federal government emanating from this committee borrowed $2.3 trillion for that tax cut?
What I believe is that everyone on the Democratic side voted for the biggest blowout for the deficit in history and that we are suffering from that. This past tax year, we will have between a 6.5 and 6.7% deficit, so I find it very difficult to be lectured to by people who created the largest deficit in history when we were not at war and not in a recession.
So I negotiated with Secretary Mnuchin the pandemic relief bill, if that's the reference point. That's where overwhelmingly the money went. That was not a bad infusion of money, it worked. The Economist magazine and the Financial Times said in January the American economy was the envy of the world. I yield back my time.
Well, the spending was not the envy of the world.
The current chairman of the House Budget Committee is from Texas, Jody Arrington.
I think my best contribution now in 5 minutes is to separate fact from fiction and help debunk some of these tired old baseless and false claims from my Democrat colleagues. Let's start with Ms. Sanchez and her claim that they didn't pass the tax bill. That's not wrong. That is completely false. The Inflation Reduction Act was a tax and spending bill. They levied taxes on corporations. They increased taxes on stock buybacks. It was a tax and spend bill. We marked it up in the tax committee. What you won't find, though, Mr. Secretary, is a tax increase on the billionaires. You won't find a tax increase in their tax bill on millionaires. They didn't raise the tax rate for the top 10%, the top 20%, the top 30%. They didn't raise taxes on their millionaire. They didn't create the wealth tax that they're going to criticize us for. In fact, we're preventing all marginal rates from increasing by extending the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, and including the top rate from going to 39% from 37%. They didn't increase it from 37 to 39%. They had total Democrat control, and they didn't do it. Feign indignation is what that is.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
I appreciate the opportunity to be here today to highlight what the U.S. Department of Agriculture has accomplished since the start of our new administration just a short few months ago.
Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins before the House Ag Committee.
Under the Trump administration, the hardworking Americans who feed, fuel, and clothe our nation and the world are at the center of everything we do at USDA. Our USDA is putting farmers first and taking bold action every single day. The following is a quick list of just a few of those highlights over the last 118 days. First, tackling the avian bird flu outbreak and lowering the price of wholesale eggs by more than 65%, with retail prices following at 25% and gaining every week. Second, taking action to respond to foreign disease outbreaks like the New World screwworm, because food security is national security. I'm sure we'll get into that today. Third, we've kicked off a comprehensive effort to identify and to rectify politically motivated lawfare originating and against our family farms, such as the Maud family of South Dakota. Fourth, we are streamlining unnecessary regulations and cutting red tape for poultry farmers and other producers, for example, by extending line speed waivers and removing duplicative data collection. Number five, USDA moved out the Emergency Commodity Assistance Program in record time, and a lot of leadership in this committee to get that money there. And aid have already sent out aid to more than 500,000 farmers in just the last 8 weeks, with a total of over $7.7 billion out the door to date. Additionally, we have issued $1 billion of the emergency livestock relief to date and are on track to meet our deadlines for the remaining congressionally authorized disaster programs, which are so important, especially since the Farm Bill was not done in the last few years. Number six, in the Oval Office yesterday, talking with President Trump in the media about the increase of productivity and production in our timber industry after being decimated over the last few years. Seventh, opening up five markets around the world in certain parts of the world where new markets have been opened and our products have moved in, Great American Farm products. And finally, continuing to address waste, fraud, and abuse in SNAP and, frankly, all USDA programs that have long neglected to put our farmers first. This includes a review of thousands, tens of thousands of contracts, grants, employee trainings, and DEI programs, resulting in over savings of $5.5 billion. My team and I are regularly meeting, as I mentioned, with foreign partners, expanding markets around the world, promoting agricultural products, which are the best. I've already traveled to the UK and to Italy. I am soon to leave for Vietnam, Japan, and India, and after that, going to South America. We are working as hard as we possibly can, pushing these aggressive trade deals to put our American farmers and producers first. In this administration, it doesn't take more taxpayer dollars to boost timber production, to unleash American energy dominance, and to balance unfair trade commitments around the world. It just takes a president who can harness the strength and ingenuity of the American people. There is still much work to be done as we realign the American and world economy at the service of the American people and the American farmer. We are leaving no stone unturned as we evaluate the effectiveness of all of our programs, and I thank each one of you on both sides of the aisle for your collaboration in that effort.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
We're really close. I'll be making a major announcement next week on the very next step, which will be probably more aggressive than anyone in recent history on the New World screwworm. And I think you and hopefully the entire committee will be very pleased.
Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins testifying before the House Ag Committee. And the former chairman of the committee from Oklahoma, Frank Lucas.
Last week, I chaired a subcommittee hearing to discuss voluntary conservation programs in the Farm Bill and the improvements Congress can make to ensure that these programs truly work for producers that they're intended to benefit. I heard from a variety of witnesses representing both producers and technical assistance providers, and they agreed with reinvesting the unobligated Inflation Reduction Act funds into the baseline of the Farm Bill without the climate sideboards is a necessary step to ensure that these programs reach more producers. To that end, Madam Secretary, I've heard from many of my producers back home that the Climate Smart Commodities grant process under the Biden administration was confusing and left little room for producer choice. Can you share with the committee what you're doing at USDA to revamp this program and to streamline the application process for producers?
Yes, sir. Thank you. That remains a top priority for us. We've already made announcements on how to make it easier, cleaner, and better, and to put our producers first. We've asked several applicants to reapply based on that as a priority and driving that forward. If you hear anything different, Congressman, please let us know. It's those anecdotes that help us get better. But yes, sir, we are solving for that every day at USDA.
It sounds like the Advancing Markets for Producers initiative is focused on making sure producers come first. and that USDA is a partner alongside producers rather than a dictator. Does that sound like an accurate assessment of what you and the department are attempting to do?
That is accurate. We've asked people to reapply if and when they have at least 65% of their application focused on producers.
Rollins also faced questions from another former chairman, David Scott, from Georgia.
Madam Secretary, you have advocated stopping the funding going to the 1890s African-American colleges and universities. Do you realize the damage, backwardness, and evil that you have done?
Well, first of all, your premise is completely wrong. In the last administration, I was in President Trump's West Wing, and fully funding the HBCUs was my project. I stood in the Oval Office when that happened. I, to date, continue to be, alongside President Trump, one of the biggest advocates for our HBCUs and our 1890 projects. So I'm not sure what information you have, sir, but that is definitely not me. And you can look at my long history of supporting those efforts. I think they're very important.
So, if I understand you correctly, you support this vital program? You have
Yes.
not frozen or advocated freezing
No.
the money?
No.
You are full steam ahead.
Full steam ahead. Now, we are looking at every program at USDA. So as part of the larger effort to analyze and evaluate, yes, but no, our support is paramount for those projects. The president has been unequivocal in his support, and we will continue in that direction.
And this is Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
I'm new in this position, but I do want to say that one thing that I have found consistent across that is that there's always a focus on inputs.
Testifying before a House Natural Resources Committee, Interior Secretary Doug Burgum.
Whatever number might have been in the budget before, if that number has gone down even a penny, people somehow think that that's going to be damaging to citizens, to land, to services, and to the work and the mission and the fulfilling of the laws. But one thing that I've understood over my lifetime, that it's not about the inputs, it's about the outcomes. And certainly under my leadership at the Department of Interior, we're going to be focused on outcomes, and whether that's improving student outcomes at Bureau of Indian Education, getting to a spot where we're going to be harvesting more timber than we're burning, making sure that when we talk about the balance sheet of America, a balance sheet from business is not about liquid. The only people who liquidate balance sheets are people who are going out of business. The United States is not going out of business. We have the strongest balance sheet in the world, but that balance sheet needs to help get us a return. We all collectively, regardless of party, were part of a country last year that spent $2,000 billion, that's a $2 trillion deficit. We spent $2,000 billion more than we brought in. That is one of the biggest dangers to our children and our children's children. And so as we look for ways to deliver and deliver on the mission of Interior more efficiently, I would look for bipartisan support for that. To just attack an agency at any point in our lifetimes, or maybe I will, because now an AI data center we're not processing a healthcare claim, we're not processing a shopping order. You're actually taking electricity and converting it into an intelligence. And that intelligence is essential to everything we do. It's that there's no golden dome, there's no defense network, there's no cybersecurity, there's no ability to, you know, cure multiple diseases, all these things, unless we've got AI. AI is going to accelerate innovation. Innovation's been the core of American greatness since our beginning. And now we have this tool that's going to allow us to do that. But we're in an AI arms race with China. And what's holding us back right now is electricity. I spent 30 years in tech. We never used more than 1% of the nation's electricity. And as the chairman just said, the demands for electricity are going through the roof right now. And what we've been doing as a country, particularly under the previous administration, was shutting down base load and dramatically over-subsidizing intermittent. This creates imbalance in our grid. It's not about politics. It's not about ideology. It's not about climate change. It's about physics. And we've got our grid is in great danger right now. of being able to sustain. I mean, we've been literally at points this winter, minutes away from us having an incident like Spain had a few weeks ago, where and one of the places that was at risk was right here in the PGM grid, which, think Pentagon to Wall Street, where we had the day that President Trump was inaugurated, January 20th. It was very cold at 5 a.m. across that grid area. 70% of the power is coming from fossil fuels, 22% from nuclear, and only 0 from solar, 2% from wind. And we were, and we've spent $100 billion just in this part of the country subsidizing and trying to get to all solar and all wind. If you have solar and wind and it's intermittent, you also still need all that base load. We can't run our country where we need 7x24 on intermittent power. And we've got lots of clean energy, nuclear, geothermal, hydroelectric. Those all represent, base load approaches to green energy. So anyway, we've got some challenges ahead of us, and what we're doing is trying to speed up permitting.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Madam Secretary, we're truly grateful to have you with us today.
At a recent hearing before the House Ag Committee featuring Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins, Chairman of the Committee, G.T. Thompson.
This committee is dedicated to the prosperity and long-term sustainability of rural America. Our nation's farmers, ranchers, and foresters are the fundamental piece of America's number one industry, which clothes and feeds millions of American families and billions around the world. And that is why Congress came together at the end of last year to provide a meaningful relief with $21 billion to address weather-related losses in 2023 and 2024, and another $10 billion to help offset sustained economic losses impacting producers. I'm grateful to Secretary Rollins for the work she has done and will continue to do to get those dollars out the door and ensure that help reaches the producers who need it most. Largely thanks to these investments and a renewed emphasis on expanding global markets, recent USDA forecasts show net farm income stabilizing for 2025. Those dollars, while not enough to make producers whole, were enough for many to keep the lights on and obtain credit to farm another year. However, input costs remain high and commodity prices continue to soften, and forecast margins, working capital, and debt loads continue to deteriorate. Our work to support America's farmers and ranchers is not yet complete. Over the past several years, the producers we represent have withstood unprecedented mix of adversity, a global pandemic, record inflation, supply chain disruptions, animal disease, and natural disasters. And yet they've continued to deliver the safest, most abundant, and most affordable food supply in the world. Well, that's not something that we take for granted. It is something we must support through sound policy, stable markets, and a strong USDA. That said, we have plenty to discuss this morning, Madam Secretary. We're eager to hear your plans to make USDA more efficient, particularly as it relates to reorganization efforts, ensuring that there is not a disruption to customer service. We're also interested in your strategy to support producers with today's challenging trade environment and animal health risks. As you and the President work to lower barriers and open new markets, we navigate these issues together, I trust you'll continue to keep the interests of the American agriculture front and center. We're turning the page to a new chapter for American agriculture, one where new scientific breakthroughs and technology will work hand-in-hand with tradition, stewardship, and grit to address the challenges at hand and build on the legacy of resilience and innovation driven by our farmers and ranchers. As part of that new chapter, it is incumbent on Congress to do our job. The One Big Beautiful Bill is a critical down payment on meaningful change for America, but it's just the beginning. We must also deliver a full farm bill reauthorization that provides certainty and long-term support for our producers. Once we complete the reconciliation process, we will build on that foundation with a comprehensive farm bill later this year. Secretary Rollins, I know that you bring to this role a deep belief in the power of rural America and the American farmer. We share that belief. I know that we are aligned in our commitment to the people in this country who produce as well as those who consume. As we begin this conversation today, I want to underscore my hope and expectation that the relationship between this committee and the Department of Agriculture will be strong, it will be a strong, productive partnership. The future of our food supply, our environment, and our economy depends on it.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
There are 370 other units managed by the National Park System. These are places created by Congress that allow people across the country to get the National Park experience in their own communities. They range from the MLK National Historical Park to Belmont Paul Women's Equality National Monument, Teddy Roosevelt Birthplace Historical Site, other beloved units that are critical to telling the American story. So simple yes or no, Mr. Secretary, will you allow the sale or divestiture of any of these units of the National Park System to state, local, or private entities?
California Representative Jared Huffman to Interior Secretary Doug Burgum.
I can give examples of
yes or no, sir. It's a straight-up question.
I don't think it's a straight-up question. I thought you wanted to have a dialogue, but the dialogue...
I don't want a dialogue. I want a yes or a okay. No. Will you allow any of those units to be sold or divested?
Well, thank you for being clear that you don't want a dialogue.